Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I'm joined by Tom and Melissa Gould and Marta Kristen. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Marta. Lovely to see you.
We were just talking before we went on air. We're all in different parts of the country, so a big temperature swing. Where Marta is, it was 82 today. Where Tom and Melissa is, you know, was probably in the 20s today.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was freezing at 58 degrees. And I get no sympathy from Tom and Melissa. So before we get started, by the way, this is the show where we address questions that you have. Some of you have emailed with some questions. We'd love for you to call in to the show and talk to us. We're easy to talk to. And the number here is 888-627-6008. And before we get started, thanks, Tom. Tom has my cue card up there. 888-627-6008. Thank you. So I'd just like to mention we have registration open for our April retreat in Florida. That's for parents who have lost children only. And tomorrow registration opens up for our July retreat in Connecticut. So you can go on foreverfamilyfoundation.org, go to events and, you know, find, you know, the event and you can read about it and register, you know, if you would like. So, now, you know, we don't have any callers right off the bat, and I think, but we do have emails. So let's go to them. The question was, I'm curious how one actually knows if they are a medium or not. Do you have to be born with it? Can it develop later in life? I don't know how many times we've been asked that question, right? And there's varying opinions on that. I mean, my opinion is that you have to be born with a certain degree of intuitive ability. I mean, we all have it in varying degrees, but I'll never be able to become a medium. You know, I don't know about you guys, but a lot of the mediums tell us that they, from as long as they could remember as a child, they had these abilities. They suppressed it because you don't know what to do with it, you know, when you're a child. And mediums also say that they go for training and they go for mediumship development classes. But I think if you're not born with it, you know, there's little chance of you becoming, a great medium. How do you feel about it?
You know, it's funny when you mentioned that ability. A lot of the mediums that are certified with the foundation have written books, and often they feel the medium felt as a child a lot of connection, and family would shut it down. It was a little too frightening,
right.
And that was so sad. You know, reading those stories, making them feel as a youngster that something was wrong with them, but others embraced it. And I do know that a lot of I only can speak about our mediums because those are the ones I've gotten to know and read their stories.
Right.
And they have had help with developing their abilities, a lot of them, it comes out as anxiety at first and makes their lives very difficult. But to answer your question as far as, are they born that way? I know just over all the years out of curiosity, and actually not over all the years, early on in my exploration, before I became involved with the Forever Family Foundation, I would go to some workshops, not thinking that I had any mediumistic abilities at all, but I was just so curious how it all works. And it was fascinating to see how we would be guided to trust our instincts. Because as I've said before on this program, under the guidance of a skilled medium, those of us studying this with her, we're making connections, but it was just such a, it wasn't like an aha thing. It was more just some, just say what's on your mind. And whatever we said was relating to somebody else in the room. So I think people expect it to be this big, whoa, what just happened? And it's really not. It was rather subtle.
Yeah. And there are a lot of mediums that we know that didn't start practicing medium until they were, well into their, 30s, and maybe even 40s. And they went for training and development, but they all had these abilities when they were children. It's very, I really don't hear of anybody, at least with the mediums that we know, that started late just like that and learned it. They can tell you stories from when they were kids. So I think you have a certain degree, have to have a certain degree of ability.
I do think, though, that everybody has the ability in them when they're born. And as we've noted in the past, that children will have imaginary friends that they see and they talk and play, and when the parents find out, they tell them, no, that's just your imagination, and you're kind of society beats it out of you in a way that you don't pursue it on that end of things. And then also, I do know that we had one medium who actually does classes in mediumship who, I don't think she had abilities her entire life, and she, after seeing John Edward work, got very excited about the prospect and actually developed her own skills and now is a competent medium. I always equate it to the old, anybody can play the violin, but if you're going to want to play at Carnegie Hall, you're going to have to practice. And that's the difference. It's a rigorous training for most people to go through the process of learning how to be an evidential medium.
Yeah, thanks for that. Let's go to a caller. We have Kim from Illinois. Hello, Kim.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm
welcome
fine.
Welcome to the show. I understand you had a question about how long in the past can a spirit, communicate with somebody? Was that the gist of your question?
Yes. My current situation, I have had a recent trauma death in my family, and it's made me a believer now of this process. And I have somebody that passed away that was very close to me 20 years ago. And my question is it too late for me to be able to reach out to that person? Because now I'm understanding and have learned and believe in this process now. Will that spirit, soul of light still be there?
Yeah, it will definitely be there. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, most people report that their communications with their loved ones in spirit tend to get lessen the frequency of the communications as time, as we know it, goes on. But Mediums will tell you that they can communicate with people that have been deceased, 50, 60, 70 years, So, our consciousness, our energy never goes away. So, but the other question is, once somebody is in the spirit realm for a long period of time, they may not feel the same urgency that they did when they first crossed over to communicate with their loved ones, because they're on to, they're progressing in the next world. But in your case, since you never were able to communicate with him, yeah, I would certainly try it, whether it's directly or through the services of a medium, because he may be waiting, to get to talk to you.
I was going to add to that too, Bob. I agree. And Kim, I don't know whether you've ever experienced a mediumship reading, but we do know that one goes into it with expectations of who they would like to hear from, but it's always the case of whether or not that spirit is able to communicate with that particular medium. So I think it's certainly worth a try, and just to be open to whatever else comes through. But because of our beliefs, or at least mine, I think your loved one in spirit, that 20 years makes no difference at all. And if your intentions are there and you're open-minded, I'd give it a try.
Okay, if part of me was saying to myself, does the spirit 20 years ago, or the person that crossed over 20 years ago, do they get angry at me because I haven't been a believer?
No, 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 no.
Okay.
They certainly understand that on the other side, and anger is not something that's prevalent at all in the spirit world. It's all about love and compassion. And as long as you have
Okay.
a love connection, that actually never fades, and that never is broken. I've heard often related that when you pass away, there are always spirits there to greet you, and they're usually people that you have loved that have and lost, and they're there to greet you when you come over. So as long as you keep that love alive, not only can you communicate at some point, but you will actually see them again.
Yeah. Kim, let me ask you a question. Before he passed, did he believe in life after death?
Probably would say no. I would probably
Okay, so,
say no, that it's more of
yeah.
a skeptic.
Right. So, how could he be angry with you? I mean, there is no anger on the
Right.
other side, because he himself was probably very surprised when he passed, and then he woke up and he found himself still alive. So,
Right.
your beliefs don't really matter. But you have to get back to us and let us know if you if he comes through.
Okay. I appreciate it.
I'm picturing him chuckling all the times. He's like, Kim, you don't realize I'm right here. And no
Okay.
anger at all, just like maybe almost amusement. Like, you'll find out.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thanks for
All right.
calling,
Thank
Kim.
you for your time.
All right. Take care. Marta, we were talking this morning, and you were reminding me of the story where you were given a necklace by somebody that you love, and you were explaining that when you're wearing that necklace, you feel connected to her, right?
Yes.
So our conversation was, and conversely, when you're not wearing the necklace, you don't feel the same closeness. So we were trying to figure out why that would be. I mean, do you think that there's energy imprinted in that necklace that was given to you?
I think it's an imagined energy because, I know she's with me all the time. And it's just that I found it after the fires and I thought I had lost it. And so it became more significant in my life. And I put it on. I was surprised to have found it. And it became this great gift. And I finally decided I would take it off and to just sort of see. And I have since then found that as long as she's in my heart, then I'm all right. And she will always be there because, as Tom and Melissa say, love doesn't die. It remains. And she saved my life, essentially, when I was 5. So in sending me to the United States and to a wonderful family. So she's with me, and I know that. And I find little things that she, you know, like little notes that are notes of encouragement. And I often think, that's from her. Yeah. Like I'll find something like, be grateful. You know, life is a joy. And, you know, something that I had written years and years ago. And all of a sudden, it'll fall out of a book.
The reason I asked about like possibly an imprint is that, you know, a lot of mediums believe in psychometry. So they will ask the sitter, you know, to bring an item from their loved one. And by touching that item, they feel that it facilitates a connection. So I wouldn't totally discount the fact that there's something other than your love. You know, she may be, her energy very, very well may be encapsulated in that necklace. You know?
Well, now that you mention it, I do touch it every day.
And I do agree with that because we've heard stories about hauntings where the people see on this, the balcony of their house, there's a woman who just sits in a rocking chair and might get up and walk and back and forth. And they think that they have a ghost in the house, but it turns out it's just an imprinted memory or energy from when that person was alive who probably used to sit in that chair. So if that can happen, certainly somebody who wore a necklace, their energy is still somewhat printed on that. And if you hold the necklace or wear the necklace, there's a it's a conduit of energy that you can connect to.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. I agree.
You know, we've talked in the past about manifestation. So another discussion I know that Martin and I got into, you know, people think that we talk about inane stuff, but we talk about some deep stuff. Deep shit.
If you allow it.
I was going to say,
I think the MARTA is the connection there.
I know. And I'll always make a joke and I ruin it. But so we were talking about, you know, very often somebody will say something like, oh, I hope they die or I hope they suffer. They don't really mean it, but they say it. And then, you know, and they're putting the thought out there. And sometimes people say, well, you know, I hope they have good fortune. I hope that they, you know, live a good life. And that's putting the good thoughts out there. And also a lot of people are superstitious. Oh, my God. Like, if you say something, like, don't say it. So, you know, do you think that there is anything to, you know, when you put the thoughts out there, that somehow you're collapsing the wave and making it happen?
Ooh. I get stuck in that thought thing sometimes when I, you know, get stuck on a thought that not harmful to anybody, but really to me, you know, revisiting something. And then a simple example might be like, of course, it would always be probably related to my children or you, and worrying about something. And it's probably just a mom thing, you know, are they okay? And then I get nervous, like, oh my goodness, I'm putting out like sort of a negative intention. And so the only way I kind of reason with myself is I'm just this little tiny entity. It would take thousands of people to be putting that out there to make anything bad happen. I'm very insignificant in this whole big picture. And so I'm being ridiculous. But I might follow it up with lighting a little candle and saying a prayer.
Yeah,
well, yeah, I grapple with that myself, and I do go into those, you know, I think Mo calls it catastrophizing, you know, if Melissa's out for anywhere and she was supposed to be home an hour ago, oh my gosh, you know, I go through all kinds of thoughts. And I think that I do believe in manifestation. I do believe in setting intentions and that you can get the ball rolling for things to happen. And then I'm going to step back from that to say, well, you're setting an intention, but who is actually getting that ball rolling? And that's the energy of the universe. So the energy of the universe is love and compassion. So if you say, I wish that guy would die, that's does not compute with the universe. They're not in the business of making evil or bad things happen. So I doubt that you can manifest evil in that regard. I think the only way you can personally manifest evil is by doing evil deeds yourself.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Also, we're not even putting free will into the equation. You know, you're sending that thought out there, but there are so many different decisions that so many people are making all the time that, you know, the thought might be bouncing all around in different directions, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see. Are there certain things that those in spirit find harder to communicate than others? In other words, is it easier to appear in a dream visitation than, let's say, move an object or manifest in physical form? So, you know, are there, you think that there are some things that spirit can do easier than others, you know, and it's a valid question, you know.
The dream part, it involves the dreamer to have that awareness and be in the right state. So that's, I never gave that any thought, but it's true. Like the loved one could be trying to come. Oh, would the loved one know that you're sleeping? Ah, they're asleep now. Let me come to them.
Sure. So,
well, just by frequency, right? People report, for instance, like you mentioned, dream visitations all the time. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ask in the crowd how many people have had a dream visitation, half the hands go up. Not so often with psychokinesis and moving objects, right?
Sure.
So that process might be more difficult, you know, from, you know, somebody, but in spirit. But then again, even here, we know that psychokinesis exists and it's not easy, you know, to reproduce, you know, in a laboratory setting. So I do, you know, it's like everything else. I think communication from the other side is a learning process, you know?
It's a learning on both sides. I think
Right. The
question opening up, is it easier for a spirit? Well, I don't think any of it is easy for a spirit. Otherwise, they'd be sitting next to you all the time talking to you.
Right.
It's a very impossible.
Maybe they are.
Well, you're just not hearing it. But I mean, as far as, you know, you talk about going to a medium, it's a vibrational thing. I mean, we're at a very low level of vibration, and spirit in the spirit world without the physical body is in a very high level of vibration. And the spirit has to bring their vibration down, and the medium has to bring their vibration up, so that there's a meeting place where communication can happen. And, you know, as some mediums say, well, you can get your vibration higher. Yeah, you can learn how to do that. But it's all about getting the vibrations to meld. And then you have to get the medium, if you're sitting in front of a medium and wanting to speak to one of your spirit loved ones, it's not just as easy, it's the vibration. It's also a frequency thing, that am I on the same wavelength as the medium? If I'm trying to get a message over, maybe this medium in my vibration doesn't meld. And whereas you could sit with one medium one day, and then the next day you're with another medium, and one can communicate great, and the next one can't get anything at all. So there's a lot of variables And I don't think it's not easy on any level, but the question is, what is easier? And as Bob pointed out, you get a lot more people experiencing a dream visit than you do from other types of communication.
Yeah. And we, when people ask us, we always, when they ask us things that they could do to help facilitate communications, we always say to set the intention, you know,
yeah.
like before you go to sleep, talk to your loved one. And Marty, you told us about when, you know, after your husband died, you know, you would set out an intention every night, and he did come to you in response to that. So what's going on there is our thoughts of love, because that's the common denominator, is that somehow, I don't want to say summoning, but is that like a signal or a conduit to people on the other side to make that connection? They feel the love, they feel the emotion. Is maybe it's not even so much thought, it's emotion that gets transmitted.
Well, I also set up a scenario where I would go in a boat and then go to an island and then go to and climb to a beautiful island, climb to a building that, and I'd open up the door and he would be there and we would talk.
Oh, wow.
And I would ask him about, you know, certain problems I was having or, you know, about my parents and so, you know, that connection prior to sleeping, more than not, I would have a dream about him, and it would be very brief, and but he would come to me, and he would ask me a question, or and we would have a very short conversation, but you know, after a while, it just I stopped. I just sort of, he said, just let me go for a while. And I did. And it was very difficult. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he said that, but that was the message I got. And maybe he wanted me to go on with my life because I was holding on. So
I think that's what rang in my ears when you said that, let me go for a while. I think that was his way of saying, you know, you've still got life to live.
Yeah.
And go ahead and do it, you know, and I'll be here. He'll be there when you cross, to be sure. And he'll probably come back and say hi as well. But I think for all of us, and that's the message that we get countless times from mediums is, you know, to get out there and enjoy yourself. You know, life is so short. Again, I bring it up again. I do it every show. They talk about our soul is eternal, thousands and thousands of years, and our soul will still be vibrant. Whereas maybe 100 years, you know, if we're lucky, we get on this physical plane. That's nothing compared to eternity. So it's kind of like, and again, another example I use, I apologize for bringing in the same thing, but it's kind of like an amusement ride. When you come to this planet, you're getting on a Ferris wheel. You're in a one of the carts, and then somebody else is in another cart, and then it goes around, it stops, and somebody gets off the cart, and you're still on the cart, and you're going, oh no! They're off the cart. Oh, no, I can't enjoy the rest of the ride. And they're down there waving at you. Say, hey, I'll see you when you're down. But they don't want you up there crying. They want you to enjoy the rest of the ride. And then we'll get together. So that's the analogy that I keep coming back to.
I love that one. And I know that when people often lament that they're not getting the dream visits, spirit doesn't want you just laying in bed hoping for another dream visit. And so the message you got, Marta, was, you know, exactly what it should be.
Yeah. It was, I know it was from love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you told a story the last time that was I mean, I don't know if you realize how incredible it was. And I've since contacted some researchers to ask if they ever heard it. But you were telling a story where your mom and dad, you know, when your dad was dying and your mom was comforting him, she saw his life review.
Oh.
Yeah, what
Did it?
happened was that the nurse told me, my mom was sitting in a chair and I was in the windowsill sleep, and we were both sort of sleeping, but the nurse had told me that when his blood pressure went up and down, and that that was going to be the end. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and his blood pressure, the machine was going up and down, and I woke up mom, and she got up and put her forehead next to his, and she looked up very surprised. And I said, "What is it?" And she said, "I just saw his whole life going through my head."
Wow.
Yeah. And they had been married 70 years.
Whoa.
So a long time.
Yeah.
And but they were definitely united in so many ways in life, and now in death, I think.
Oh,
Yeah.
that's beautiful.
I mean,
And she never cried. I just want to say she didn't. She kept saying what a wonderful life they had together. And it was that she knew that it wasn't the end. And she didn't cry. She didn't. I would have drinks with her every night. She would thank me and I would thank her and all of that. But she didn't cry.
That's the ultimate sharing experience, you know. I mean, share somebody's life with you. I mean, we know that. I mean, Raymond Moody has written books about shared death experiences where people that are with the dying see the same loved ones that the dying person is seeing. But I've never heard where somebody had a life review, and neither have the researchers that I contacted. So that really is an incredible story.
It is.
Yeah. We have Michelle from Boston on the line. Hello, Michelle.
Hi there.
Hi. Did you have a question, Michelle?
Yes. I have recently been reading a little bit about the Akashic Records, and I was reading like it's like the soul's library, and it kind of contains every thought and experience and emotion across all of a person's lifetimes. And I was just wondering if any of you have ever had your Akashic record opened and read, and what your experience or understanding of that is.
Well, I've never had it read. I mean, you know, physicists would say that the Akashic Records, they call it a zero point field. It's a storehouse of information. And that was one of the arguments that people used to use to dispute what mediums do, saying that they're really not speaking to the dead, they're just extracting information from the Akashic records or from this zero point field, as if that was easy, but I don't know, I don't doubt that there's a supposedly, these storehouses of information contain, as you alluded to, everything that's ever happened is happening and will happen, all at once. So, it's pretty, it's, you know, it's, it, you know, it's pretty incredible. So could you gain access, if you gain access to this field of information, that would be amazing. I don't know that anybody has,
Is it
Tom, yeah.
that at all similar to what happens in a past life regression?
Well, in a past life regression, supposedly, the person is reliving the person that he once was, not extracting information from a field, but the Akashic Records is a, an old concept. It's interesting that the physicists now have a name for it, not the Akashic Records, but yeah. What are you thinking, Tom?
I don't know if I've ever experienced any reading or person who can do that. Whether, it probably could be done, but I don't know if it has been done or you can physically.
Yeah, there are apparently people who have received training. I mean, they say similar to like mediumship probably, that people can learn to do it themselves, but there are people. I actually, part of my reason for my question is I haven't had it yet, but I did schedule a reading, and I learned from that person's website that, which I actually found through the person that you had on last week, her blog, that do this, that have been training to do this. I don't really know any much about it, and haven't had it done. But I'm
we don't really either
to try it.
Yeah, Michelle, you'll have to call us back after your.
Okay. When are you scheduled for this?
Monday.
Oh, great! Well, by all means, call us back. I'm fascinated to find out what you find out.
Me too.
I will report back when you have another discussion.
Okay.
Yeah, the first Thursday of every month is ours. So.
Mark your calendar.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle.
Have fun with it.
Bye.
Yeah. Here's a question: do our prayers for our loved ones in the next world help them in any way?
I think so. I think all the love we can send them helps them on their journey. If they were loved, they lived a good life, and that love continues.
Yes, and again, I've mentioned it twice already. Love is the energy of the universe. So if you are sending love to a spirit, you're giving them energy, and you're feeding them. So keep it going.
And helping them advance.
Definitely.
Yeah. This question we've touched upon already. As time goes by, I feel like I hear less and less from my daughter lately. It's been almost 5 years. Is there an explanation for this? And, as we mentioned before, it's possible that your daughter is moving on and doesn't feel, the same need that she did, initially, to maybe you're getting on with your wife and so forth, but that doesn't mean that you're not going to hear from her. You just haven't heard from her lately, So I don't know the explanation. We think that people are always learning on the other side. And as Tom alluded to, moving to higher frequencies. And sometimes when, it gets more and more difficult when somebody's frequency gets higher to communicate with a lower frequency dimension. So that could be a possible reason too. But I wouldn't despair. As we said, sometimes mediums bring people through that died 100 years ago. So it might happen.
And you can continue to ask for signs. I've been told you can be pretty specific in what kind of sign you want to get, but what I would say is don't look for the big burning bush, look for the subtle things, a coin or a feather or a song on the radio. Those things happen. If you get into your car, you turn on the motor and your loved one's favorite song is playing all of a sudden, say, hey, thank you, good to hear from you. And that's the second part, is you can ask for the sign, but if you receive the sign, acknowledge it and say, oh, thank you for the sign. I love it. Thank you. And be grateful. And that hopefully will encourage more signs.
That reminds me of when I was, after my father died, and I was so distraught, but we had a trip planned to Ireland, so we went there. And I was thinking all the time about him. And there was a street performer. And all of a sudden, as I was approaching, he sang a song that my father would play on the harmonica. And it was a very, very old song, "Believe Me If All Those Endearing Young Charms."
Yes.
And I knew it was from him. Because, I mean, how often do you hear that?
Yeah.
Especially from a young street performer. And I said, oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And you felt it, right?
I felt it.
Yeah.
There's that knowing that we always talk about. Instantly, you just knew.
Right? Warm glow, like a hug.
Yeah. We have Megan from New Jersey on the line. Hello, Megan.
Hi.
Hi.
Here.
Did you have a question?
Yes. So I was wondering if people on the other side can, I know you said they can't feel anger, but I was wondering if they could feel sadness or guilt, like for like me being sad now that they're gone.
Well, I'll jump in with that one. When you clicked on guilt, I have witnessed readings where somebody's sitting there and somebody comes through. 9 times out of 10, it's a man. And the sitter starts to bristle like, oh, no, I don't want to hear from that guy. He was horrible. And they're coming through on the reading to apologize for being as abusive as they were. And so, yeah, that's a feeling of guilt is a, you know, whether they emotionally feel guilt or not, but they cognitively know that what they were doing was wrong, and they wanted you to know that they're sorry, they're sad, they're guilty. I don't think it's something you dwell on, but it's certainly something that they feel.
Yeah. And I don't think, you know, I think sadness and guilt are human emotions. I don't think that they feel it the same way that we feel it. But I think it's emotions that get that transmitted. So that's why they feel our love. A lot of people ask, are they harmed by us grieving? Do they feel our grief? You know, they bear in mind they have a different perspective. They know that this physical existence is just a blip in the continuum of life. They don't look at it the same way, you know, as we do. So I think that they feel all the positive, you know, love and compassion that we feel. But somehow I don't think that our sadness in the physical world affects them the way that we think it affects them.
Right.
Yeah.
I heard that someone speak about how they had a near-death experience. And one of the things that they felt was the feelings of when they hurt somebody, the hurt person's feelings and the complete empathy and understanding of what they had done to that person throughout their relationship. And it changed everything when he came back dying. And he said he changed everything after that, everything. And perhaps, you know, that's a life lesson as well. Mm-hmm. We try and be as empathetic as possible, but to recognize someone else's pain and to feel it, that's something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. And you were talking about a life review. I've been told that the life review is that very thing, that you go through your life, and if you've been bad to somebody, as you just mentioned, you feel the pain that you inflicted on somebody else. And that could certainly inspire you to try to get a message back of apology for that pain.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that life review happens at the moment of someone's passing. It doesn't stay with you. You know, it's just that one experience to get you where you need to be. So it's not like they're always going to be reliving that like a loop. All right, Megan, I hope that makes sense to you.
Yeah, it does. But I was more wondering, like, if say they were a really good person and like very compassionate, empathetic person, if in the afterlife they can feel sad for the person that they love that's grieving, like my dad passed away, and I don't want to make him upset because I'm upset.
I think he has compassion for your feelings, but I don't think, as in the spirit world, it would manifest as a sadness in them. It's more of an understanding. Looking upon your sadness, I would think his thoughts would be, she'll understand one day, you know, we're going to be together, because you're sad because he's gone, that you're not with him, but he knows one day you'll be together again. Or if it's, and if I'm incorrect in assuming that's what the sadness is, if it were over, you know, something that had happened while he was physically here, again, all of that will be resolved when you both are on the other side.
Yeah, and it's all part of the human experience. So when you're no longer living the human experience and you're in spirit, you can look back and say, my loved ones are going through it, you know, basically, well, you're going through it. You'll get through it is probably what they're thinking. But yeah, I don't think that you're certainly, I think the one phrase that you said that you're either holding them back or making them feel bad by you feeling bad. And I don't think I'd have to say no to that.
Well, thank you for calling, Megan.
Thank you.
All right. Take
thank
care.
Thank you.
Right. Bye.
You know, Bob, can I jump in now?
Yeah.
I just think about Megan's call, and I don't know, you know, obviously her details, but thinking about what the examples we gave when a loved one comes through and apologizing or not before the apology, and the medium says, he or she says who they're bringing forth, and the sitter goes, I don't want to hear from that guy. We should also mention, so the person on the other side wants to make amends for perhaps how they treated the sitter when they were physically here. But I wonder if people then get concerned, like they're going to have to be with them on the other side. And that makes me think about the soul groups. And what do you think about that?
Well, the person that they're going to see, that person that they're going to meet up with again, is not the same person he was in human form. You know, he's a totally different entity. You know, I mean, you know, an entity with a lot more compassion and love and understanding than he was with all those human emotions of ego and greed and jealousy and, you know, and all that stuff. So, you know, we think of them the way, obviously, the way that we knew them in the physical life, but that's physical life is just this one little bit, you know, so I think that people should not worry about that.
Kind of like, well, I don't want to hang out with them when I get to the other side.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, that's a good point. Here's a quick question. Some people refer to dying as passing. Why? Well, I guess passing.
Well, I think because dying has such a finality to it.
Right.
And as we have discovered with our studies, it isn't the end. In fact, Bob Weir, who just passed a couple weeks ago, referred to it as the beginning. He said he was looking forward to death, and he didn't know when he was going to die. He didn't know he was going to die 2 weeks ago, but he said he was fine with whenever it happened. and looking forward to it with the sense because you're going to embark on a whole new adventure. And so when we say passing, you pass from this physical life into your spiritual life. So you're not, there's no finality to it.
Yeah, that you're exactly right. You know, it's passing from, as they say, from one room to another, you know, so yes. Whereas dying, you know, everybody thinks is that's it, you know, you're extinguished forever. We know that's not the case.
That's, if I may say, that's an interesting question for me because I use dying and death. I use that word all the time after my parents and my husband died. And because I thought that passing or transitioning was sort of in la-la land and that indeed they had died. And of course, as time passed and more experiences occurred that where I had connections with them all, I began to think of differently. And I softened. But I think part of saying that, oh, they died, the finality of that, I was angry. It came from anger and from you know, just this strong experience of unfairness, of loss. And but I've softened since then.
Yeah. Well, I totally get that because, you know, I mean, the grief is so raw. You know, and it is final to you, you know, in the physical sense, you're never going to see them again. So you don't want to diminish, you know, the depth of that loss and sorrow. So they died, you know, but then, and some people will always think that way, you know, you change, you know, all of us, you know, have changed. So we don't quite think of it, you know, in that sense. So I totally understand that. So we've got, a few minutes. Well, the question was, does everyone go to the afterlife? I mean, are there some people that just, that's it? They don't go? I mean, I think we all go.
I hope so.
Because goes? Our consciousness. Our consciousness never dies. So we're always going to continue, you know. So if you want to call that the afterlife, you're going to go to the next realm. So no matter what kind of a person you were and what your desires are, you have no choice. Your consciousness is just going to continue on.
I mean, I know where that question is coming from because you hear a lot in certainly in movies and that of souls that are kind of stuck. And, you know, they'll hire there's special mediums. Well, there's one that's who wrote a book that all she does is gets people unstuck. But they're still in the afterlife. And then that's the other thing. And people go, well, you've gone somewhere else in the afterlife. And you haven't actually gone anywhere else. I mean, you hear about people, they go to a meeting and they say, well, they're standing right behind you. So you're still around. It's just you're vibrating at the higher level and people can't see you. Most people can't. But you're still there. And I think what the getting stuck part is that they're not ready to give up this life and leave their favorite haunts or whatever. But they can't, it's not something that you're stuck and you can't get away. It's just that's where you want to be at the time. Apparently there's a lot in the next realm that you can do and enjoy and have fun, and it's incredible. And so most spirit goes and does all the different things. I mean, my father came in a reading and talked about, well, you know, see that jet ski out there? Well, I'm going to go out there. I can ride all day on that jet ski and they'll never know I'm there. So that's the kind of thing you can do if you're in spirit.
Well, I once got stuck on a jet ski, so I don't know.
Oh, that's dad.
Tom's dad.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's time for our global peace prayer in honor of Claude Swanson. Let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, and to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
And I'd like to say our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
Good night.
Good night.